Good day, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Debate from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. No talks with the United States. That's a decision announced by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei finds it nonsensical to enter negotiations with a country that has reneged on its commitments and promises and resorted to the language of force. A good example for that is the Iran nuclear deal, or the JCPOA, from which Washington has withdrawn. Today we'll discuss that issue on this edition of The Debate, but first we'll have a report.
Iran will not hold any talks with the U.S. because Washington is untrustworthy. Those are the words of Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who on Monday outlined the Islamic Republic's policy toward negotiations with the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump. Ayatollah Khamenei slammed the U.S. sanctions against Iran, saying they are meant to separate the people from the establishment in the Islamic Republic.
جنگ اقتصادی هدف آمریکا ایجاد نارضایی است. هدفشون اینه. میخوان نارضایی ایجاد کنن. این نارضایی رو بلکه بتوانن به اغتشاش داخلی تبدیل کنن.
The leader cited the U.S. withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal as proof of its untrustworthiness. Ayatollah Khamenei said the U.S. has a habit of gaining tangible concessions in return for empty promises.
در مقابل اون چی که از اون نقد میگیره چیز نقدی به او بده مثل هر معامله‌ای که شما پول میگیری خب جنس باید بدی دیگه نه جنس نمیده نقد رو میگیره در مقابلش وعده میده بعد که قضیه تمام شد کارش گذشت زیر همین وعده هم میزنه این وعده قرص و محکم را مثل باد هوا فراموش میکنه این روش مذاکره آمریکایی یا اینه حالا با این دولت با این رژیم زورگوی متقلب باید نشست مذاکره کرد چرا مذاکره کن
The leader also ruled out the possibility of a military confrontation between Iran and the US.
جنگ نخواهد شد. چرا؟ برای خاطر که جنگ دو طرف داره یه طرف مایی و طرف اونه دیگه ما که خب جنگ رو شروع نمی کنیم ما هیچ جنگی رو شروع نکردیم ما وقتی که طرف مقابل شروع کن البته با قدرت وارد میدان میشیم آمریکایی هم جنگ رو شروع نمی کنن برای اینکه آمریکایی ها گمان میکنم اونها هم میدانند که اگر جنگی رو اینجا شروع کنن 100% به ضررشون تمام خواهد شد
The leader also denounced the U.S. silence on the recent massacre of Yemeni children in a Saudi airstrike. Ayatollah Khamenei said it's shameless of the U.S. to describe the Saudi regime as an ally following the deadly attack. The leader's comments come in response to the U.S. offer for talks with Iran over a range of issues. U.S. President Donald Trump has on several occasions said he is ready for negotiations without any preconditions. Trump in May pulled the U.S. out of the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA unilaterally. The move drew condemnation from the other signatories to the accord, namely France, Britain, Germany, Russia, and China. Iran says it has fully complied with the nuclear deal. The remaining signatories to the agreement and the International Atomic Energy Agency confirm Iran's compliance. Most Western observers say international law is on Iran's side as the Trump administration is notorious for ignoring international deals, including the nuclear agreement. In his remarks, Iran's leader said even there should be any talks between Tehran and Washington, they will not happen during the tenure of the current U.S. administration.
Okay, now let's start debating the issue. Let me introduce our guests who are joining us today. We have Fatem Gerry, Director of Eurasia Future, joining us from London. And also we will be having with us Frederick Peterson, who is a senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor from Santa Barbara, California. Now let me begin with Adam Gerry in London. America has proved to be unreliable when it comes to sticking to commitments that it has undertaken under different kinds of agreements and deals. Now, why should anyone in the first place trust Washington and engage in negotiations of any kind with it just exited a landmark deal, as you know, signed by itself and its own allies, and also endorsed by the UN, the Iran nuclear deal.
Well, you're absolutely right to phrase the issue in that way. I'm personally in favor of dialogue in all geopolitical circumstances. Indeed, I'm in favor of dialogue in all business circumstances. But dialogue isn't worth the time of day if there isn't a sentiment of good faith and a willingness and ability to act upon that good faith throughout the course of the negotiations and in the aftermath when it comes time to actually implement what one has agreed to. So in this sense, given the U.S. track record, it's very obvious to see why people would find the U.S. to be an unreliable negotiating partner. And I'll go a bit further. In the specific case of Iran and the United States, I'm under the impression that the Iranian Supreme Leader's statement was motivated very much by what the United States has done to Turkey in the recent days. And it would really help if this translation in my earpiece would be turned off. But with the United States doubling the aluminium and steel tariffs on Turkey over the last several days, and when this itself was in the aftermath of the United States putting sanctions on two important Turkish ministers of state, the Iranian side would have looked at that and said, if the United States can treat a fellow NATO member that way, the country with the second largest military in NATO, then what's the point of us in Iran negotiating with the U.S.? I'm almost certain that that was the attitude that motivated the timing of the Iranian Supreme Leader's statement, and now there's people cheering at a football match in my earpiece, but there you go.
Okay, let's go to Santa Barbara. Frederick Peterson, good to have you with us, sir. Let's have your comments on that. Why should Iran trust Washington?
Join with them, those Iranian people of good faith that are truly reaching for peace, reaching for prosperity, reaching for an arrangement between two countries unprecedented to bring peace to the region and prosperity to the region led by the Iranian people. This is an opportunity offered to Iran by an American president that is not part of a political establishment. In fact, some of his deepest and most aggressive enemies are from within the political establishment
in his own country, allied with a collaborative media and allied with business interests to seek to profit from big, intrusive government. Donald Trump is not this, is not any of those, and he is reaching out to Iran in an unprecedented manner so that those of good faith may sit down together, reason, plan, and work together as friends for a future of peace and prosperity for all. This is something Donald Trump, we must understand, is not from an establishment, was unprecedented in American history. His lack of political connection and involvement. He is a man of the people, leading the people. He has major enemies and adversaries within his own country, some within his own party, and yet he is reaching out, providing an opportunity that is star-crossed and very valuable to both Iran, the United States, the peoples of both countries.
Huge problems. There's some speech playing in my.
Okay,
sir.
Frederick, please go ahead. But the question, please answer this. How can we trust, you know, President Trump flip-flopping, you know, he's been doing this, you know, depending on his mood or whatever else. In the morning, he wakes up and he reacts in his tweets. How can you trust such a person? I mean, and also the person who as some of our political analysts joining us, called he's an existential threat to Iran, and there is nothing in it for Iran. They're advising Iran against this. Go ahead.
The American people trust it. The American people and the Iranian people of good faith can trust him moving forward in good faith with them.
But Trump is empowered. American people don't decide, sir. It's Trump who decides. He says something, Pompeo says something else. But at the end of the day, it's Trump who decides.
He is, indeed it is. This is true for every leader in every country. But the people of the United States have an unprecedented faith, really, that at the end of the day, at the end of the tweet, Donald Trump is and is headed in the right direction, will be doing the right thing, both for themselves and for the world. This is not to aggrandize the power of the United States. It is to extend the principles of peace and prosperity to the world. This is the environment from which he comes, not a dark climate and circle of political intrigue, but rather one of business, of building things, of making deals, that you keep your word and you make the building grow. And this is exactly what he is attempting to do.
Okay.
There are people who would like to betray that. The tweet, quote-unquote, can be unnerving. Yes, I quite agree with you. It is unnerving, and it seems undisciplined and off the page at times, but this is a direct means of communicating the feeling and the principle of Donald Trump to the world. And the American people largely have confidence in it, and a growing confidence in it, as they see the principles that they hope will be represented in the White House are being lived and worked out by this president.
Okay.
I urge Iran, the leadership of Iran and the Iranian people, to embrace this, and we can walk together to a future that is brighter and safer and more prosperous for all.
Okay, but there's this big wall of mistrust between, you know, that hindering the Iranians' view. Anyway, let's go to London. Adam Gary, how can you reimpose sanctions on Iran, heap pressure on the country in different ways, and then ask for talks? I mean, pressure hasn't worked on Iran in the past 40 years after the Islamic Revolution, and nor is it working on other countries like Turkey, Russia, and others. Don't you think that the U.S. needs to change its approach when it comes to dealing with Iran?
Well, and in dealing with Turkey, with Russia, with China, with the European Union, with Pakistan, with India, with Vietnam, with the Philippines, and the list goes on. I think that it would help to revisit Thucydides, in whose Melian dialogue the Athenian spokesmen were quoted as saying that the strong will do what they will and the weak will submit as they must. This is essentially the U.S. foreign policy. It's one that doesn't respect dialogue. It doesn't understand the fundamentals of diplomacy. It defecates all over the U.N. in both letter and spirit. And it's a real shame, because unlike some who have wished ill upon Turkey, and I'm really surprised at some of the quarters where this is coming from, I want prosperity for every country, and I believe that peace and prosperity are two concepts that go hand in hand. But even though the United States has operated on the basis of, let's call it, Melianism, to return to Thucydides, what we're seeing now is that the U.S. might, in the medium and long term, be sanctioning itself. If all of those countries I mentioned moments ago band together and say, we're not going to be bullied by you. If we're cut off from your markets and from your financial institutions, we'll trade with ourselves. We'll go to the financial institutions in Shanghai and elsewhere. And if all of these other countries actually follow through on this, the United States will find itself being in an autarkic position where it will have to rely on its own self-sufficiency, what little there is after Ronald Reagan and a few of his predecessors reduced it. But on the whole, the United States is ultimately isolating itself in trying to isolate so many countries. What they're actually doing is helping other countries to at least form the early stages of an economic coalition. It will be asymmetric. There will be some countries more enthusiastic about this post-New World Order, if you will, than others, but we are seeing the early stages of this development. Certainly, the way that Iran and Turkey are responding in concert to multiple U.S. actions acts of economic aggression against them both shows that a country that's the second most important army in NATO and a country that's had dismal and non-existent relations with the U.S. for most of the period between 1979 and the present, if those countries can get together economically, then the United States should be careful what it wishes for, because many other countries will be able to do so as well.
Okay, let's go to Santa Barbara and shift gears. Frederick Peterson, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution rejected the possibility of a war with the U.S. for certain reasons. Do you think the U.S. will wage a war against Iran? Is it likely? And should a war break out, what repercussions will it have? Who will suffer?
I really think it is not likely. It is very unfortunate that the language and shall we say the emotions are being thrown around like this, because a war would be in no one's interests. The United States realizes that. We hope the Iranian, we know the Iranian people, we hope the Iranian government.
The Iranians already emphasized they never start a war, like history has shown.
We are not interested in a war with Iran. However, we are interested in the principles that Donald Trump is espousing, and the opportunity in the olive branch is being offered. We hope that it will be embraced with a handshake, a hug, and a walk forward together to a brighter future for all. War is in no one's interest. And the new allies that are being talked about, if they think that they can somehow ally materially against the United States, they're making a very, very bad decision for their governments, for their people, for peace, and for the future. It is utterly unnecessary. We have a path to peace. Let's take it together. And as far as Turkey goes, Kemal Ataturk must be rolling over now and sighing in pain at the way the new government in Turkey is leading away from his traditions and the integrity that he brought to Turkey, spanning continents and spanning peoples and cultures. They are breaking the bridges between West and East, and this new government should be ashamed of itself. To call themselves NATO allies, in quotes, and then betray the very principles of that NATO alliance is something that the Turkish people are reviewing, and the more serious Turkish people wish they had a new editor, not an old style tyrant. And unfortunately, one is being paid for the other. I don't think that's going to go well, actually.
Okay.
And I think it's not going to go well because of an imposition of the United States, but by an internal rising up of the Turkish people to stop this new revolutionary direction in Turkey.
All right, let's go to London and also back to the main topic, Adam Gary. We're talking about a likelihood of the U.S. waging a war against Iran. Do you also, are you also of the opinion that a war is unlikely? And should it happen, what will the ramifications be?
Well, yes and no, but first let me just decry that total misrepresentation of Ataturk. He's the first country that he made a pact with and whose government he recognized long before anyone else's was that of the Soviet Russian government. So Ataturk was totally multipolar. He looked east and he looked west, and President Erdogan looks east and he looks west. If some Americans don't like the internal policies of the AK Party in Turkey, don't go to Turkey. Maybe they should have told the terrorist collaborator Brunson that several years ago. But to the issue of a war on Iran, I don't think there'll be a traditional war on Iran. I think what the Iranian government needs to look out for are the threats of hybrid war. Iran should look out for the U.S. weaponization of the PJAK, extremist Kurdish organization in the northwest of the country. They should look out for the weaponization of al-Qaeda elements in the province of Sistan and Balochistan in the south. They should look at what the United States is doing with the current Iraqi government and the future incoming Iraqi government, which will be in there sooner rather than later, possibly led by the deeply controversial Muqtada al-Sadr. So the United States doesn't have the guts to attack Iran directly. Thank God for that. I don't like war. Most normal Americans don't like war. Most normal Iranians don't like war. Okay. But what a lot of the devious elements in various governments will do is try to weaponize various extremist and separatist groups on the various border provinces of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And that's what the security services must look out for.
Okay. Santa Barbara, Frederick Peterson, your final thoughts. 30 seconds, please.
Well, I'll leave aside the humorous remarks that were just made. I'm sure they were offered in jest and not in any serious dialogue.
No, it's entirely serious, I'm afraid.
I didn't interrupt you. The hope is, of those of good faith, and I hope the other guests would join us in this, that we are reaching for the same thing, an olive branch of peace, not an arrow in a sword of war. If we can, in good faith, make that statement, then all we have is not to advance individual or nationalist or religious or any other objectives, but rather the good of the people and the prosperity of the people. We have a star-crossed moment in history under Donald Trump, under the leadership of all the countries present.
Okay, I have to stop you there. We are running out of time. Sorry for that. Let's go to London. Adam Gary, very briefly, please. We're running out of time. Final thoughts.
Well, the world is facing a precarious situation, and so is the United States. If the United States wants to prosper and live in peace, free trade and less war is the answer. If the U.S. just wants to be self-sufficient, fine. Be protectionist, be autarkic, but don't bully the other world just because you want to leave the international consensus of free trade. No one cares which of these two decisions the U.S. does, but they should make the decision and they should do so in peace for the benefit of all.
All right. Thank you very much for taking part in this debate. We had Adam Gary, director with Eurasia Future from London, and also Frederick Peterson, senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor, joining us from Santa Barbara, California. That's it for this edition of the debate. Thank you for watching, and goodbye.